Hi, it's Diane. Great to be back with you. On my mind, the latest chapter in the battle over the Mueller report. Attorney General William Barr refused to testify before a House committee after a contentious hearing in the Senate. A letter from Special Counsel Robert Mueller indicated his displeasure with Barr's handling of his team's conclusions, and House Democrats threatened to hold the Attorney General in contempt of Congress for refusing to hand over the unredacted report. So, what does it all mean? I asked Harry Littman, former U.S. Attorney and host of the podcast Talking Feds, all about the escalating showdown between the executive and legislative branches of government. We spoke Friday morning. Attorney General Barr testified on Wednesday. How important do you think his testimony was in the context of the entire Mueller investigation?
I think it is very important in two respects, but whether it'll be truly critical or dispositive remains to be seen. But first, just the fact of his being there, asserting, defending sort of pugnaciously against all comers, the proposition that the Mueller report itself doesn't state a crime of obstruction against the president. I think in the overall dynamic as it plays out across the country, that has the possibility of being a sort of fait accompli for the very 99% plus of people who haven't delved into a 448-page report. That just might be their understanding of the facts of the matter. So that was one piece that was important, just his being there and asserting it and giving reasoning that he hadn't given before. He actually said that his analysis had been based on the evidence and that in 2 days he managed to go through it all and come to completely different conclusions from Mueller. So that was important. And then on the other hand, I think it was important that there were several times that he seemed scarcely credible, that he has, I think, now initiated an all-out war with the Democrats, that I think his credibility was sorely prejudiced with the press. And so he's now a figure of tremendous controversy, where I think even as of Tuesday, he wasn't. And that will continue to play out. So it's these sort of warring forces, strong suggestions that he's not to be believed. On the other hand, the sort of bare assertion of Trump's exculpation that might, in fact, just become kind of concretized in the country.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi called him a liar.
Right. Even in the somewhat no-holds-barred culture of D.C. these days, that's tough stuff. And you couldn't get away with it unless he had left an opening for it. And that means there's now this open warfare. Nadler as well essentially called him lawless. And, Barr is very much, even though he's a brainy guy, a sort of New York street fighter. And I think effect of this naked warfare will be to have him dig in further. And now we have him having the spectacle the next day of, I'm not coming to your hearing unless if you have actual lawyers question me. And the huge point that's lost in this kind of, I wouldn't say silly, but I would say overly politicized back and forth, is the huge public interest in knowing the basics of the most, I would say, the most important decision by the Department of Justice, maybe since the Saturday night massacre. And that's his decision for the department to say there's no crime here. We basically have a very incomplete account of it. All we have is what happened Wednesday. And while they're fighting and going to court, et cetera, what's really being ignored is the public's right to know, a hugely important decision.
Do you see House Democrats moving toward impeachment, firing, or any other move that could throw Barr out.
Well, they are hopping mad, aren't they? Remember, no cabinet official has been impeached since something like 1876, because what normally happens when a huge controversy like this arises, it's either sort of, you know, somebody steps in like the chief of staff to calm the waters, or if it's bad, the president discharges that official. So push doesn't come to shove. Here, push would come to shove. The president is delighted with the attorney general's performance, and that would be a very serious card for the Congress to play. I don't see it because they themselves are of two minds in all of these maneuvers and don't want to be seen as either overzealous or the impeachment happy party. And if they go after him, even thinking they have a justified case or they're so angry about it, I think it really makes it much harder for them to train their fire also on Trump. And everybody sort of knows this back and forth. They're these pious level of rhetoric, and then the sort of realpolitik stress points that constrain people for practical reasons below. So I think basically something like a rebuke or a censure won't do much. I think impeachment will be too far and they won't do it. On the other hand, you know, look at the papers today. He is really being openly pilloried by the whole sort of Democratic Party and press, and he's become a figure of blazing controversy. That won't stop.
I found myself wondering whether Nancy Pelosi would accuse him of lying if she did not intend to move forward with some kind of harsh punishment.
You know, I mean, it's a good point. I think she went farther. I believe she said it was a crime.
Yep, she did.
She charted it out. But the fact of the matter is, and this informs the whole Trump situation, the tools and options are few, and they tend to go, you know, very quickly from feckless to nuclear. So she said, for instance, as of Trump this morning, he's too good for impeachment. A nice rhetorical flourish, really indicating that this is not in our political interest. If she concludes the same as to Barr, they could do some milquetoast kind of rebuke, but I'm not sure they would think it's effective. Their calculus may be to try to just push Barr off the side and really focus on the witnesses now. Any day that Barr is there, I do think Barr's reputation is further tarnished, and I say this with pain. I was somebody who put stock in Barr's reputation. But on the other hand, he's there being a forceful advocate for the president and being willing to say almost anything. I think they might feel their best move is to just try to paint him into a corner of irrelevancy.
What about Mueller's letter that Attorney General Barr characterized as snitty and said was likely written by some of the underlings at the Department of Justice?
Can you imagine that? I mean, how high-handed could that be? First of all, of course, principals almost never write letters. Staff always does when you sign them because you mean them. That was tremendously, not just insulting, but condescending. But even more so, the notion that the criticisms in there are snitty, in other words, I believe, small-minded, picayune, not grave. I mean, that's an insult to Mueller and really, I think, to the public. The notion that Barr's maneuvers, again, I say this with real pain because I just think there's no way around the conclusion that he did it to create a false impression about where Mueller was. You know, there's no way around that they were not credible and not honest. And when Mueller says flat out, you've confused the public and distorted the not just the process, but the substance. That is a blistering criticism, especially from the buttoned-down likes of Mueller. And Barr has to know it. I mean, I think at heart the dynamic here, and there's obviously great antagonism now between the two camps, is that Mueller, a man of great integrity, knows that Barr, in fact, didn't play it straight and took his very careful work and completely mangled it. And Barr knows that Mueller knows that. And it's, I think, a source of some outrage for Mueller and somewhere in Barr's psyche of, you know, abashedness or shame. But these sort of smaller psychodynamics pale, again, next to the bigger point of the crying need for people to understand and assess for themselves just that what Barr was saying in overturning Mueller's judgment and just what Mueller was saying, because in fairness to everyone, he did, in fact, create some confusion. I think he looked at a landscape where there was no way to be completely clear or know exactly good solution, and the one he chose was debatable or created necessarily some problems of understanding in the public.
Talk about the other letter that the White House wrote to Attorney General Barr.
Trump has had really almost comically inept lawyers around him the entire time, with a few exceptions. Emmett Flood is one of those exceptions. It's a sophisticated letter. It's interesting. It, too, as Barr does, trashes Mueller. And why? For his basic judgment. It says, you know, what the hell is this? This, you know, half truth commission and half law school exam. Prosecutors say yes or no. That's what they do. So it takes him to task. He did lead with his chin, did Mueller, that way. But of course, he had a Hobson's choice, because there is no way to say thumbs up, given the OLC opinion that you can't indict the president. But this is a 4 or 5 page letter. One interesting thing it tries to do is preserve a claim of executive privilege, which it seemed clear to me and most observers that Trump had waived. Trump's the only person who can assert it. And Flood has tried to say in this letter, we can still assert it. It was just for this limited purpose. I doubt that will fly, but we know that that's another way that the arguments are going. So he really takes Mueller to task and then comes back in with the broadside favored by the right and Fox News of the flawed or even corrupt genesis of the attention against Trump, which has always seemed to me a almost silly kind of evasion. But it's an interesting letter that to me was particularly noteworthy for telegraphing some of the arguments from the president himself that we can expect.
Now, a quick break. When we come back, more from Harry Litman.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
And we're back. Here's the rest of my conversation with Harry Litman. He is a former United States attorney and deputy assistant attorney general at the Department of Justice. He's currently the host and executive producer of the podcast Talking Feds. What about the Democrats? How well do you think they did in their examination of Attorney General Barr?
I do think they scored a few points, but I think this is one of the many, many, many kind of Rorschach tests that essentially it was seen according to one's preconceptions. So I know that Kamala Harris made him look a little bad. You know, I thought White House had some effective points, but I don't think that there were people in the middle who were undecided who said, oh, you know, maybe Barr is not to be trusted and we should just look to Mueller. I think largely the White House is satisfied when Barr is up there talking, even if he looks bad to all the people who already don't like Trump. And that's largely what happened, except to me, I'm someone, Diane, who originally was bullish on Barr's nomination. I thought he was a strong institutionalist who would push back against Trump. And the most difficult, the sort of most searing aspect of that hearing to me was simply the words that came out of Barr's mouth. When you realize that what he was really saying was he had somehow completely improperly and irregularly just blitzed through the whole report and come to an opposite conclusion on the evidence and then had kept Mueller out of the process and given him no deference. When I really realized that was his argument, that to me was horrific. But, you know, I'm unusual here. I followed it closely and I used to work with Barr. So, you know, the Dems did, some of them did okay, some of them didn't, but I don't think it's a dramatic victory for them. It also, by the way, reinforces the point that's just so strong and that makes Barr's cavil in not showing up look like what it is. The best way to do this, just objectively, is to have lawyers ask the questions, build up a sustained kind of dialogue back and forth with the witness. It's just a better way to get out information. And that the attorney general has used that, has drawn the line there in the sand saying, well, if you're going to ask me that way, I won't even play, is very telling. I also think very weak. If the House wants to ask it that way, they can.
So Congressman Nadler says he's going to give Attorney General Barr one or two more days to, I gather, think about whether he's going to come back. What are the points of negotiation here, or do you believe that Barr has simply slammed the door?
Well, I know I don't think he slammed the door. I mean, the way these things always worked before was saber rattling of this sort and then a negotiated solution. You know, here it's very illustrative of the difficulties of the position. I think the Democrats and Nadler are completely right. I think under the law, Barr's argument that the House can't choose to use lawyers is near silly. But the missing hidden factor that everyone knows is under the surface is time. And it'll take a few months to prevail there. And is that really how the Democrats want to spend their time? So on the other hand, there's just not much room. Barr said again this morning, oh, I'll come if you don't have those nasty lawyers asking me questions. It's hard to think of a middle ground there, but both sides, I think, are telegraphing, even in Nadler's tough 1 or 2 days or maybe Monday or we'll see. He understands and the department understands that it's not an empty threat, but it's less, I would say, potent than it seems just because these things are set up. There should be reform here, but in general, they're set up to make it very difficult for Congress to prevail. You know, this happened with Eric Holder in Fast and Furious. It happened with Harriet Myers and the U.S. attorney scandals. If they really choose to go to court, which should be their prerogative, it's basically a losing battle because it takes so long that the salience of the issue, you know, evaporates. And everybody knows that. So that's the Nadler's playing a very strong legal hand and a pretty weak practical hand. On the other point, though, I'm not sure what the middle ground is here. Do they say 15 minutes of lawyers?
Yeah.
Does Nadler just cave? Barr, I think it's clear, we knew this before, he is a tough cowboy. He doesn't care about I've been held in contempt and those sorts of things. That, you know, the sullying of it will not deter him.
You thought that Barr was going to take his role as Attorney General and play it straight down the line without giving preference to President Trump. So now we've seen by his brief summary with which Mueller disagreed that that's not the case.
What I thought he would be certainly is, well, one, that he would be strong for the troops at the Department of Justice. And in fact, to the contrary, he's helped trash the, at least the FBI upper echelons. But, you know, one can make certain arguments about the proper role of the attorney general and what and his relationship or her relationship with the president. But the one thing that shocked and broke my heart was, you know, Barr's basic judgment here, what he said about the conduct, et cetera, it is not a credible professional judgment. There's, you know, whatever role you play, you know, he has put his reputation and integrity behind essentially, you know, a politically driven false account. And that makes my head go around 360 degrees. I just would never have thought it, whatever strong a warrior he might be for the president. Remember, he said specifically, I'm not factoring in any of my views of executive power. I'm just taking Mueller's account and reassessing it. And the assessment, it's he cannot believe it in his heart. So that's incredibly disheartening.
So now Mueller has been invited to come before the House Judiciary Committee on, I think, May the 15th.
Right.
If indeed he accepts that invitation, will Mueller stop holding everything so close and put out everything he believes he has found so the public can hear it directly from him, or will he hold back?
It is a great question. I really sort of thought about it in different iterations for the last couple of years because, yes, he's the soldier and rule follower, but the stakes for the rule of law and the values he's spent his life on are enormous. And
exactly.
I mean, he's already in the context, in the sort of world of the Department of Justice, he has been very severe in writing those letters, which you saw in the flash of honesty in Barr on Wednesday saying, Bob, why don't you write a letter? Why don't you call me? Meaning, why did you put that bomb in the file and knowing that it would go off, which it will? And remember, again, he must feel a great sense of loyalty, not just to the truth and the rule of law, but to the people who have served him so loyally for 2 years, who have been really
exactly.
completely demeaned here. And any reading, any close reading of his report shows, must show that he did in fact conclude that Trump broke the law. And so, you know, a careful set of questioning ought to be able to tease that out. So I say all those things, and I do think you'll have Mueller, you know, leaning in that direction as much as he ever has and ever will. But it's still Mueller. He still, you know, understands the fact of the matter of who is the attorney general. You won't see him go rogue. You certainly won't see that.
But what does that mean?
What does that mean?
What does going rogue mean?
He won't trash Barr the way Barr has trashed him.
Telling what he and the FBI found.
There are two issues. First, to what extent will he go outside the written record and provide personal editorial comments? And my best guess is a teeny bit, which for Mueller is a lot. And then second, to what extent will it be apparent that his professional judgment and that of the team was that the line had been crossed multiple times? And there, I think the answer will be it will be apparent, just because it is apparent from a careful read of his work product. And when he comes to testify, they will discuss carefully his work product. So I think that much will be there.
If Mueller does speak, and we don't even know if he's accepted that invitation yet, do we?
No. On the contrary, he is still a DOJ employee. Barr has said it's fine for him to go. But I think we know that he hasn't. They're supposedly in negotiation. Of course, We're given to understand he's done no work basically since the end of the probe, and he's not even in the building, and that his tenure is almost you know, will be at an end any day, along, by the way, with another interesting private citizen to be, Rod Rosenstein. So it will shortly be his basic decision, although for a former employee, there are certain commands that the executive branch could try to make to clip their wings in subject matter. But I think everyone understands this will be his decision. And even if you're just nefarious and looking to shut everything down, this is Bob Mueller. The smart way to do it would not be with a heavy boot, but to, you know, I think Barr and the White House counsel has to understand a day in the future is ahead of them where Mueller will be testifying and basically making clear that the president is a crook.
All right. If Mueller does speak and speak forthrightly, what could that lead to?
It could lead to anything. Here's what strikes me as pivotal, and this really has to do with the internal political calculations of Pelosi and, you know, the whole Democratic leadership. Although I'll say as an aside, I've come to understand only in the last few weeks something that I didn't know, even though I've worked with people on the Hill a lot, which is if Nadler and Schiff and Cummings really want to pursue investigations, Pelosi's ability to limit them is incomplete. So full-bodied investigations could go forward anyway. But I think this will be the question. Right now, 46% of the American people believe the president committed a crime. The others, I think, many of them are Republicans who reflexively believe in the president. And many, I think, are just people not paying that close attention who know, oh, well, the attorney general cleared him. If Mueller not only speaks forthrightly, but persuasively, and it comes to be the understanding of two-thirds of the American public, say, that the president, you know, obstructed justice, then I do think the Democrats are emboldened. They won't use the I word yet, but emboldened to have the sorts of investigations that dominate the headlines and the news cycles, pushing hard on the Lewandowskis and McGahns, maybe even the Steve Bannons of the world. And it's a sort of repeat of the drama that we had, say, in Watergate, where, you know, there's nothing quite like having witnesses under the Klieg lights, you know, having to give it straight. But whether they'll have the stomach for that, I think will depend on if Mueller's account takes hold. It should. I'm here to repeat again with some pain as a former Barr supporter that it's not a close call here. There's only one real credible professional judgment, that is Mueller's, that Trump was over the line many times. No prosecutor worth his or her salt would say otherwise. I believe that strongly. It's not a close call. If that becomes the sort of majority judgment of the American people, then the dynamic changes.
Harry Litman, thank you so much.
Diane, it's really a pleasure to be able to talk about these issues at some length. Thank you.
And that's all for today. I'd love to hear your reaction. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, or send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. You can find all our podcasts and even old Diane Rehm shows at dianereem.org. Our theme music is composed by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsverk of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Our engineers this week are Douglas Bell and Natalie Yurev-Lipker. Thanks for listening. I'll be back with you on Tuesday. I'm Diane Rehm.